This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. President Biden will address the nation tonight after returning from Israel. And the world's watching how Israel pursues its war against Hamas in Gaza. Massachusetts Congressman Seth Moulton has specific advice. The congressman represents the Massachusetts 6th, which covers much of the North Shore, and sits on the House Armed Services Committee, where he's the ranking member of the Subcommittee on Strategic Forces. We caught up with him shortly before the show this morning. Congressman, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Great to be here. Thanks, Tiziana.
So you're a former Marine, 4 tours in Iraq, and that experience led you to write an opinion piece for CNN this week in which you warned against Israel's war with Hamas becoming a quote-unquote forever war, concerned without a plan after the fighting, it could actually create more insurgents. What does that mean?
Well, thanks, Tiziana. And just for the record, we like to call ourselves Marine veterans, not former Marines. But the problem that Israel faces is in many ways the same problem, the same challenge that we faced in both Iraq and Afghanistan. And we all know we made a lot of mistakes. The very first mistake we made is not having a plan for the day after, for the day after the fighting. When we went into Iraq, for example, we actually had a very similar mission to what Prime Minister Netanyahu has laid out for the Israeli Defense Forces. We were to defeat Saddam Hussein's army. They are to defeat Hamas. But we haven't heard anything about what happens next. And I'll never forget coming home after that first deployment, thinking that we had won the war, and then being told a few months later that we'd have to go back to Iraq. That's what I'm concerned about, is that if Israel doesn't have a plan for the day after, they're going to find themselves in a forever war as well.
So you mentioned the mistakes. I'm going to play a little bit of sound courtesy of CNN from President Biden in Israel yesterday.
While you feel that rage, don't be consumed by it. After 9/11, we were enraged in the United States. While we sought justice and got justice, we also made mistakes.
And the president also said that Hamas doesn't represent, you know, the Palestinian people. You've talked about one mistake there. What other mistakes is it important not to repeat from that time now, Congressman?
Well, obviously, everyone is concerned about the fate of innocent Palestinian civilians in Gaza. We've already heard horrific reports of dozens, even hundreds of kids, of just kids being killed in Israeli airstrikes. And what I point out in the op-ed is this isn't just a matter of humanity and human rights, although, of course, that's most important. It's also just a matter of whether or not Israel can win this fight. If they want to defeat Hamas, they need to take out Hamas terrorists without recruiting more in the process. And that's where we come to this concept called insurgent mass. The famed General Stanley McChrystal estimated that for every one innocent civilian you kill, you recruit about 10 new insurgents to the cause. That's very difficult math. That means that Israel has to be extraordinarily careful not to kill innocent civilians, not just because it's so important to follow the rules of war and the rule of law and preserve innocent life, but also because they'll ultimately defeat themselves if they kill some Hamas terrorists, but recruit more insurgents than they kill.
So that strategic consideration, I understand, you've just made a couple of references to the rules of war and the rules of life, Congressman Moulton, and I want to go back there. I know you studied military ethics as a Marine veteran, and I want our listeners to understand that military ethics and international law have multiple pieces to include what justifies going to war and what's acceptable during war. Both contain pieces about protections and concerns for civilians, or what's sometimes referred to as non-combatant immunity. I've got several questions kind of in that space. First, your reaction to Israel's treatment of civilians in Gaza now.
It's troubling. It's problematic. And it's troubling from a basic human rights standpoint. I mean, you can't just cut off innocent people from food and water and medical care. But again, it's also troubling from a strategic perspective if Israel wants to actually address this legitimate and serious national security threat to the country. Because if they just leave Gaza a smoldering mess at the end of the day, they're going to be right back where they started with a whole bunch of people who want to kill Israelis and you know, arguably even more than they started out to begin with. So Israel has to think a lot more strategically about this. And again, these are mistakes that we made ourselves going into Iraq and Afghanistan. We're trying hard to make sure that Israel doesn't make the same mistakes.
So you used the word troubling there, raised concerns. More than a million people displaced, according to the UN. Calls from organizations like the UN that this is an unacceptable humanitarian crisis. President Biden asked for and received Israeli permission for the passage of aid trucks, but they won't make it through until at least Friday. Where's the leverage? Congressman Moulton, you know, you serve on the Armed Services Committee. Where is the leverage 2 weeks almost into this now with a troubling humanitarian crisis? You know, lack of generators running out, lack of food, water, fuel. Where's the leverage?
Well, part of the leverage is a commander-in-chief who's willing to go right to the war zone himself. And that's the leadership that we've seen from President Biden over the last several days. He's spoken directly with Israeli leaders, including at length with the prime minister, and he's really trying to emphasize these lessons. I also know from speaking to a former secretary of defense on the phone yesterday that there's a behind-the-scenes effort to bring a lot of our counterinsurgency experts from the last 20 years of our wars in Iraq and Afghanistan into the fold in Israel to speak directly with the commanders and officials who are designing this operation. But I have grave concerns for the plight of the people of Gaza today. I have even more serious concerns for their fate with what comes next if Israel pursues a ground invasion.
We're speaking with Massachusetts Congressman Seth Moulton here. A couple of more questions on this subject. Other members of the delegation have begun calling for a ceasefire out of concern for civilians. For example, Congressman Jim McGovern signed on to a letter Tuesday. It says in part, quote, "This is a moment that calls for moral and strategic clarity. That is why we believe that the United States must help achieve an immediate ceasefire or at a minimum, a temporary cessation of all hostilities that stops the threats to civilians in Israel and Gaza." Do you agree with that, Congressman?
Well, I don't think that there should be a ceasefire immediately because Israel has a right to address this serious national security concern. I mean, you didn't hear people calling for a ceasefire after Pearl Harbor or a ceasefire after 9/11. You know, in real technical military terms, we talk about irreconcilable adversaries or terrorists or insurgents. There are clearly irreconcilable Hamas operatives. And the best thing Israel can do for its own national security, which it has every right and really an obligation to provide to its people, is to take out those irreconcilable Hamas operatives.
Do you believe that's possible, Congressman?
Well, that's what I'm getting to is, again, you come back to, okay, well, how is this actually going to work, right, when you get in on the ground? And that's it's a great question, TC, on it, because I think it's going to be exceedingly hard. And in my op-ed on CNN.com, I shared an example of trying to take out a handful, just a handful of insurgents in Iraq with my platoon when they were in a building and defending a building by rolling grenades down the stairs at us. And I had a whole platoon of active duty, special operations capable Marines, right? The best of the best. And yet they held us off so effectively, having previously exacted so many casualties against an army, a special forces team, that we had to get them, evacuate them from the building, that we ended up just dropping a bomb on this building to take them out. And the lesson there is not only is it extraordinarily hard to fight in an urban environment like this against entrenched insurgents who are holed up in buildings, shooting around corners and through windows, throwing grenades downstairs and from roofs and in Gaza, in tunnels under the entire city. Not only is it extraordinarily difficult from a military perspective to take out terrorists in that environment, but after you do it, the only way you're going to win the sort of long war here, the long fight, which is not just against the terrorists, but it's for public opinion, it's for the support of the populace, is to go back and rebuild. We had to go back and rebuild that building. It was actually a school that I dropped a bomb on. We had to go rebuild that building to rebuild the trust with the people of that Iraqi city who we knew could earn our support.
So last question on this piece, understanding the fullness of the answer you just gave, are there any circumstances under which you would believe it was time to call for a ceasefire, Congressman?
What I think we should do is not call for a ceasefire outright, because that sends a very troubling message to our most important ally in the Middle East, who is just trying to keep their people safe right now. But what we do need to do behind the scenes is very carefully calibrate exactly what support we're providing to Israel and make it clear that if they do things here that are counterproductive, if they do things that are illegal according to the laws of international conflict, the laws of warfare, if they kill a bunch of innocent Palestinians, then we can't support them in that. We can't support them because it's morally wrong and because it's militarily stupid. Because at the end of the day, they'll be self-defeating if they kill a lot of innocent people in the process.
I do want to leave us time to talk about what's happening in the U.S. House. Before we do that, one last question for you, which is about hostages, how to get hostages, including five Israeli family members of Needham resident Jason Greenberg, out of Gaza safely. What is that going to take? Why has it not happened yet? What do you do in Gaza?
Because of everything I've just described about how difficult urban warfare is, I don't think there's any way to get the hostages out other than negotiating. I wish there could be some heroic, special ops raid into Gaza to recover these hostages before they're killed. But realistically, as a veteran of urban warfare and counterinsurgency fighting, I think that we need to negotiate. And that's why the administration is pursuing this. Again, behind the scenes, you've heard a few press reports of discussions with Qatar and other countries in the Middle East who have communication with Hamas. But that really has to happen too. And again, it comes back to what Israel does next on the ground, because they can't completely derail the negotiations for the hostages just by a ground operation that sadly might kill a lot of innocent Palestinians.
All right, Congressman, let's go to Washington and the ongoing search for a House Speaker. Last time we talked, you told me Democrats absolutely should consider backing a moderate Republican. The discussion now to back the current interim Speaker, Patrick McHenry, a temporary Speaker to get the House back on track. Are you in favor of that in the short term?
Well, what I specifically said was that Democrats are considering doing this. I mean, we have been at the table ready to negotiate with Republicans from day one, actually from day minus one, because we were working with Kevin McCarthy to say, make a deal with us, commit to working with us in a bipartisan way. I think the bar was actually pretty low, and we can save your speakership. He flatly refused any cooperation with Democrats whatsoever. And what has the Republican conference in the House of Representatives done? They've just gone to progressively more and more extreme candidates to try to placate the extremists in their caucus, to appease the extremists. I don't think this is going to be successful. And so I think you will continue to hear Democrats calling for more moderate candidates from the Republican Party. Or, by the way, how about just five out of over 220 in the House, only five have to cross the aisle and support Hakeem Jeffries. Because in the last speaker vote, there were 199 votes for Jim Jordan, that terrible extremist. But there were 212 votes for Hakeem Jeffries. And you only need to get to 217 to have a Speaker of the House. So how about just a few Republicans find the political courage to do the right thing for the country, work with Democrats, put Hakeem Jeffries in charge. And by the way, we'll make a deal with you. We'll give you some concessions. We have been pleading with Republicans at the highest levels and the lowest levels to do this, because it's what we need to do for the country. And so far, they've just flatly refused.
So that invitation fully noted. And other members of the Massachusetts delegation have made that same invitation. So I hear you and fully noted. I will also ask you, is there a name of a moderate Republican who Democrats could get behind beginning to emerge in response to these attempts to make Jim Jordan the Speaker of the House?
You know, there are a lot of names being floated around, which is, of course, representative of the just total chaos among Republicans right now. But a good example that I just heard this morning is Brad Wenstrup. Brad Wenstrup of Ohio, you may not have heard of him, but he's a veteran like myself. He's respected on both sides of the aisle. I've worked with him on a lot of stuff on the House Armed Services Committee. And I think he has a lot of respect in the Republican conference. At least that's what I've been told. So he's the kind of moderate, reasonable, thoughtful person who we should have as a Speaker of the House. Way more thoughtful, by the way. Way better leader than Kevin McCarthy, and certainly better than the extremists they've put up since.
Is there a chance?
I don't know about what chance there is today, but I do think the chances rise over time. I mean, what we're witnessing here, Tiziana, is a nationwide Republican civil war in a party led by an indicted insurrectionist, and it's coming to a head in the House of Representatives. And it is a civil war. I mean, the chaos across the aisle is just extraordinary. The frustration on the faces of Republicans who just are shaking their heads at their own ineptness. It's not something that Democrats are standing here marveling at or reveling in. We're frightened for the state of our Congress and our country, that there is so much chaos across the aisle. I think, to bring this back to the beginning of the conversation, over time, we'll probably learn that Hamas chose this moment to attack Israel because of the political dysfunction in the Netanyahu government, the domestic unrest with Netanyahu's politics, because he has catered to the extremists, exactly what we see the Republicans doing here in the United States. So this chaos in the House of Representatives isn't just some you know, bad daytime soap opera drama, which is admittedly what it sometimes feels like watching this unfold on the House floor. No. This is very dangerous for our Congress and for our country. It is a national security risk. And that's why, look, I pride myself on being willing to work across the aisle. I pride myself on the bipartisan bills I've passed, like 988, the National Mental Health Hotline we've talked about on this show. But I have to tell you that the Republican Party right now is a serious threat to our national security.
So last question for you. I'm going to bring this home even further. Yesterday, you were part of the Massachusetts delegation meeting with the Department of Homeland Security Chief Alejandro Mayorkas to discuss the state's migrant crisis. The most important thing you heard in that meeting during the time you were there, Congressman?
I think the most important thing I heard is that he's really listening to us on things like work authorizations, on things like sending a message across the border, that it's not just going to be a free ride here in America or Massachusetts, so that people are much more thoughtful about whether they come for legitimate reasons or they're trying to game the system. There are a lot of things that need to be done to address this crisis. But I think actually one of the most important things going on today is just hearing people like yourself admit that this is a crisis, because there's been a lot of denial in the Democratic Party about the proportions of this crisis. It is a crisis. We want to be able to serve these people who have traveled thousands of miles to escape horrible conditions back home. We need immigrants in America, and we need them to fill jobs right here in Massachusetts. But this has become a crisis. We can't be sending the message that anybody who wants can just come to America for a free ride, because that seems to be the message that a lot of people are taking.
Massachusetts Congressman Seth Moulton, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Tiziana.
And a note, we spoke with the congressman earlier this morning. Just minutes ago, the Washington Post reporting that Ohio Congressman Jim Jordan will not pursue another speaker vote today.